We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're listening to BuzzBeat Radio, your premier Charlotte Hornets show.
All right. Welcome in episode 66 of BuzzBeat Radio. Richie said it before we jumped on here. It does feel like it's been a while. I guess over 2 weeks, but here we are. We are 9 days away from the NBA draft, the annual time for Hornets fans to buckle in and get excited about that late lottery draft pick that we all anxiously await for.
Woo!
Every year. Yeah, get pumped. You know, number 11, franchise-changing player coming in less than 10 days. So do not forget, we are a proud member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network and home to QueenCityHoops.com. Right now, Brian and I have done, two draft prospect spotlight series. So they're both up on QueenCityHoops.com right now if you want to go check those out. And we've got our last one. I think it'll be our last one. I don't know how we'd get a fourth one in before the draft, but hey, we're going to try amongst our lives that we have. And managing time this time of year is not easy. So anyways, our last one's coming out this probably Saturday morning. If we can get it in Friday, we will. So look out for that. Miles Bridges and Kevin Knox. I'll go ahead and just spoil it. Did some of my Knox homework this morning and starting to like him a little bit more than maybe I have. But that happens, like, Brian, you've seen this already since we've done this. Like, you think you have an opinion on a guy, and then when you do a deep dive, like, your opinion on the other side is completely different.
Yeah, yep.
So I'm sure that'll happen with Knox, too. So that's coming. And then Sports Channel 8. Don't forget about those guys. SportsChannel8.com. Go check them out. Lots of good stuff up right now. I know they're College World Series. Did Duke win the other night? Or they in, or did they lose to Texas Tech?
They lost. Yeah.
Okay, so it was going to be Duke and Carolina in the College World Series. Looks like it's just Carolina. So I know Sports Channel 8's got some of that College World Series coverage right now. They got the radio show on Saturday mornings that they continue to churn out. So make sure you check them out. Follow them on Twitter too, at Sports Channel, the number 8. All right. On that note, BG, I kind of spoiled it a second ago. We've been deep in draft coverage. Mm-hmm. It's always, we were texting the other day, it's always my favorite time of year, but it also is like sneaky stressful. But just because, like, you're trying to manage your time, and I've never done this draft process being married, which has been an experience, a learning experience for sure. So yeah, what's going on other than just watching a bunch of film and you know, diving in deep with this stuff for you right now?
Things are good. Yeah, this time of the year is interesting. This is sort of the second year I've done this now where it was Hornets centric. And it just feels weird. It feels a little stressful trying to catch up because so much of basketball season I'm watching, and I cover the ACC for my job. I cover the Hornets for this podcast and for Sports Channel 8, and I just follow the NBA at large. So when it comes to scouting Pac-12 guys, SEC guys, Big 12 guys, international guys, it feels like I'm weeks behind, and so catching up is always a bit daunting. But things are good. It's crazy that the playoffs are over with in the NBA. It feels like I have free time now. I don't know what to do with myself. Like this past Saturday, I just kind of walked around Raleigh and casually got drunk with some friends, and it was just like a thing that I hadn't done in a while. And it was like, oh man, weekends, huh? Man, I kind of miss these things. So yeah, right. No, things are good in my life. And I am currently fiending on binge-worthy television shows. So watched Mindhunter. I started The Handmaid's Tale last night, which makes me feel like I need a prescription for Prozac all of a sudden now. But no, things are good in my neck of the woods. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I can't complain. Trying to wind down. You try to get into that summer vibe, but till the draft's over, well, it doesn't change because then it's free agency. And if we're NBA fans, like, it just eats up so much of our time. So yeah. It just really doesn't matter. On that topic, thoughts on Golden State and kind of just where we are right now in the NBA. I mean, there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. And I hear some takes that are like, the NBA is overrated. There's no end in sight. Like, it should be hard capped. And I understand that perspective. But at the same time, like, it has a bunch of fans and it's exciting because it is a 12-month sport. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, in my opinion, the best sport, the most exciting sport. And the Warriors are the most exciting brand of basketball we've ever watched. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's annoying that no one can figure it out and who knows how much longer this is going to go on, but I just like watching them play.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that when it comes to Golden State, that you can't just sort of sit back and casually enjoy the product because they play the most fun and exciting brand of basketball I've ever seen in my entire life. It really is beautiful to watch. And a lot of guys on the team are pretty likable. I mean, I really like David West. I really like Sean Livingston. I wrote a piece about him for Sports Channel 8 last week, and it's been really cool to watch him win his third title in 4 years after this basically decades-long journey he's been on coming back from that knee injury. Golden State's not just some godless monolith. Like, there is some really fun parts that make them a unique and special team. The only thing I will say is it's not great for the NBA in one sense that the champions seem to be such, like, an inevitable outcome. That's the one thing, that you have LeBron playing this well at year 15 – arguably the best basketball of his career. I would argue against that belief, but arguably it's the best basketball he's ever played, at least offensively. And that you just knew he had no chance. And by the time he got to the fourth game, I think everyone was sort of ready for it to be over with, including LeBron, and ratings for the finals weren't that good. Or pardon me, for game four specifically, they were overall very good. Ratings for game four were down slightly. That's not the only measurement we should use. The NBA is totally fine. It's better positioned than literally any other professional league out there in the entire world. I don't think that's hyperbolic to say that at all. So the Warriors aren't ruining basketball in the least. They're making it perhaps a little less suspenseful, which is disappointing. But if you follow the NBA, like, you're in it. Like, this, it's not just who wins the championship. It's this whole collective community. It's the season. It's the process. I can't tell you guys how many times the last couple of weeks I can't believe I had these thoughts of, I would love to watch the Hornets play right now. Like, I'd love to watch the Hornets lose by 9 points in the game right now and text you guys and interact with the same people on Twitter and, you know, tweet out, wow, Kemba's shooting these, you know, tweet out crazy Kemba shooting stats and stats that make Michael Carter Williams look not so good, or complain about Frank Kaminsky's defense. Like, all of that is part of this sort of year long fun conversation. It's not just who wins the championship at the end of it that makes following this league worthwhile. If that were the case, then there's no way it would have this sort of intense following. So no, the Warriors are not. I watched every playoff game. It was still super intense and enjoyable. And free agency is going to be a madhouse this summer, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, what I was saying before you so beautifully kind of summed it up there is that, you know, this is a 12-month sport. And, mm-hmm. you know, that is what's so exciting about it. I mean, from a Hornets fan perspective, like, yeah. I mean, and I'm with you. I would want to watch Hornets basketball right now. I know it drives me crazy, but I'm still addicted to it. Yeah. And what I like about the draft so much is, it does provide you that one little really small skinny slither of hope that you're going to draft that once in a quarter century franchise altering player. I mean, it's not likely, but it's possible. And that's why I get excited about the draft every year, because it provides that opportunity. And look, you know, Charlotte has been in a position in the lottery to draft a guy that can help him for quite a long time now. So we get used to it. And then free agency. Now, we're not going to be a player in that either, but we are going to have to do some things. We're going to have to make trades. We're going to have to avoid the tax. I mean, we're going to be active in a way, one way or another. And and look, going back to the Warriors thing, for, you know, kind of put a bow on that, is they're only doing what Philadelphia did, right? And in the opposite way, they're only playing within the rules. And so you can't knock them. Like, you can't knock Durant for making a decision for his life that he thought would better himself within the rules.
It clearly worked too. It clearly worked for him.
Right. It works. I mean, we just, the thing that I get annoyed with when it comes to professional sports and talking about how screwed up it is and how to fix it, this conversation of how do we fix blah, blah, blah. Why does anything need to be fixed? We want everything to be this perfect oasis. And frankly, that doesn't exist in any professional sport. So here we have the Warriors, the best brand of basketball. You and I had just kind of discussed here back and forth, and now they're winning too much. Look, the approval rating of everything that becomes something always plummets, right? They always become the bad guy at some point. And that's where we are with the Warriors, although they've played within the rules here, and they're willing to pay a tax for decades.
Yeah.
You know? And they're winning, and it's a beautiful brand. So, you know, I hear the people that are tired of it, but I just would ask you, you know, you begged for a different NBA and, you know, a new brand for this league for so long, and you got it, and now you're screaming at another problem. And
it goes to show you the grass is seemingly always different, especially in outrage culture, 24-hour news cycle, Twitter, of the internet now. The only thing I would also say, too, is, yeah, Golden State won, and I was just sort of saying how it seemed like it was destined to happen in inevitability. But, like, let's not forget that the Rockets were maybe a Chris Paul hamstring injury away from winning the title this year. I mean, they beat Golden State in Game 5. They're up 3-2, and they get one of the next two games on their home court. And it looked like, to an extent, they had solved Golden State in terms of how they wanted to guard the Warriors, something they've been obsessed with for years and years and have really perfected with Chris Paul. So once Paul got hurt, it was sort of obvious, but let's not pretend like there wasn't a moment of doubt, certainly after Game 4, after Houston tied it 2-2. It wasn't quite the same after Game 5 when they won, because Paul got hurt the last 45 seconds of that game. So the doubt had sort of been removed. But, man, Houston had them on the ropes for a little bit. And,
yeah, I mean, they were up by 11 at halftime in Game 7. They had an 11-point lead at halftime in Game 7. Yeah. Like, it literally looked like it was getting away from Golden State. So I agree with you. I mean, this league's the best. You know, the Eastern Conference, if you want to fix something, fix the Eastern Conference, you know, and that maybe that'll happen this summer. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of movement, and we're going to talk about more of that later. We're going to discuss LeBron. You know, although this is just a Charlotte Hornets podcast, you know, we talk about other stuff, but LeBron should play a factor in every discussion from every angle of the NBA from now leading into the draft or leading into free agency, because he's not only going to affect free agency, and free agency is not going to start till he makes his decision, but he's going to affect the draft. And we'll talk about that, because the Hornets could conceivably get into that conversation. I think if Cavs want a serious chance at keeping him, they're going to have to make a move before the draft. But again, that's coming here a little bit later. BG, let's jump in to our top five prospects. Richie threw something out on Twitter through the BuzzBeat account yesterday, or maybe it was the day before. You know, name your top 3 to 5, you know, your wish list, so to speak, in the draft for the Hornets. We got a lot of reactions on that, so thank you to everybody that interacted with us and gave you kind of who you're looking at and hopeful for with the draft next Thursday. BG, I'll start with mine, and then let's hear yours, and then we can compare and contrast and kind of see what's different, what's alike, as we lead up to the draft here. Okay, so mine, Mikal Bridges, I have at number one. And I should preface it, these are just what I see as realistic situations, right? You could say your opinion could be, hey, Michael is definitely gone by then. That's fine. It's just what I see as is realistic for Charlotte when it's all said and done. So number one, Michael Bridges, Villanova wing. Number two, Miles Bridges. Definitely think he's going to be in that 10, 11, 12 range. 6'6 wing, Michigan State. Number three, Colin Sexton, point guard, 6'1 out of Alabama. Number four for me is Lonnie Walker. And the difference between Sexton and Lonnie Walker here is like razor thin. It's just spread of a hair. So I could really lean either way there, but I'm leaning Sexton just by a little. And then the last is Zaire Smith from Texas Tech. Freaky wing. So basically what I'm doing is I'm going two wings that are a little bit more switchy, maybe a little bit higher defensive potential than the last three. The last three are more like combo guard styles. Sexton more of a point guard, I guess, but Lonnie and Zaire definitely combo guard style. So that's kind of how I prioritize my positions and how the players line up. All right, BJ, what do you got?
Yeah, so as we've established multiple times now on this podcast, Hornets got to look best player available. Yeah, you want to consider potential fit, but clearly this team, which is needs young, good young talent, best player available. If that's the case, it's probably Miles Bridges or Michael Bridges at one or two. But just hear me out for a second, and perhaps I have a little bit of some recency bias going on because – as you prefaced this a little bit ago, too, we just did these deep dives for Queen City Hoops. I'm going Zaire Smith, number one. Yeah. I love this guy. I love this guy's game. I hear everybody on all of the obvious concerns that come with his – or not maybe not concerns, but certainly red flags that come with his shot creation, that come with his three-pointer. I hear all of that. But one of those things is a three-pointer that I think he can certainly improve on and get it NBA ready. He's not even 19 years old. He's young. And I just love the athleticism. I love the unselfish play. I love the ability to play without the basketball. And I'm just willing to – I just want to bet on his athleticism. And if it doesn't work out, that's fine. But at least we can say that we were betting on a guy that we knew could defend – and that we knew was athletic. I think it's a little different from MKG 6 years ago, too. But even though they have sort of similar strengths as of right now offensively, I think there's room for him to grow as a second side player. And who knows with shot creation. That may never come. But even if he adds the three, it changes everything. After that, Miles Bridges, for the same reasons you just sort of laid out. Then I've got Michael Bridges, number three. Lonnie Walker at number four. And then I'm going Colin Sexton, number five. But you could also put in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in there at number five, and I wouldn't hate it. I like your piece on SGA was interesting, and I just like the. I mean, I know a lot of teams get conned into these type of guys, but I like the big, long, rangy wing that can handle a little bit. And if the three-pointer ever comes along, if he had some muscle, he's a really interesting player, too. So if I had to cap it, I would go Sexton 5, SGA 6. But you could I wouldn't hate being misquoted or having that order flipped either.
Yeah, all right. So let's start with Zaire because although I have him 5th, I literally have asked myself – I mean, I text you right after we posted our piece. I guess it was last Thursday. BG had Zaire Smith. I had Colin Sexton. I read BG's piece sitting in a coffee shop in New York City right after we'd finished this thing, and I'd posted it, and I'd text him. I was just like, are we sure this guy isn't Russell Westbrook? Like, you just some of the stuff he does is just phenomenal. It's amazing. I don't remember seeing an athlete, you know, at that combo guard. I just don't remember seeing an athlete like that explosive. I don't remember the last time. I mean, now that I'm watching Russell Westbrook in the NBA and you go back and you watch some of the stuff he did at UCLA, you're like, oh yeah, okay, there it is. Of course, his role was way, way different, but Zaire's the same kind of guy. He's so unpolished that you can't just give him this huge offensive role. You have to harness this energy and this explosiveness and unleash it somehow on the floor without him having the ball in his hands a ton. And it was kind of the same thing for Westbrook at UCLA. Like, it really was. And the similarities for those two guys, just in terms of athletic ability and explosiveness is like really has me seriously thinking, could he be something like that? So I completely understand where you're coming from with putting Zaire one. My thing is that every time I do a draft prospects ranking every year, I always say, if it's obvious that it should be a best player available situation, as this year definitely is, I agree with you there. I always say that should take precedent, but also put a heavy weight on fit too. And it's just, you know, kind of my nature when I do this stuff. So that's why I have guys like Michael and Miles 1 and 2, because I do want to just leave the door cracked on Kimba being here long term.
You know, and you should, as we should too.
And, you know, all of a sudden, if you have a Kimba Zaire Monk, not that it can't work. I mean, Zaire, who knows? That guy might be able to guard guys that are 6'7" with no problem. But that becomes a big question mark, right? Like, that takes the right coach and the right player development situation to get the most out of a big swing like that. I wouldn't be upset with it, but that's just kind of my mindset. But I'm glad that you have him one, because I think it's totally it's exciting to have that kind of mindset, because I'm so close to it. And I think it's totally justified. And I think more fans should think like that when it comes to this Hornets rebuild, because that's what it's going to take, a risk, a high risk, high reward situation.
You said it perfectly there. It is a risky pick. And look, I would be thrilled to see the Hornets draft Michael or Miles Bridges. They seem, as compared to Zaire Smith and Lonnie Walker, for that matter, too, you know, those the two Bridges, they have lower, probably higher floors, but lower ceilings. Like, there's their lower variance prospects. And there's an appeal to that, because, as I've said a few times on this pod before, too, Charlotte just has to get somebody this year. They've had so many issues with the draft, whether it's been swinging and missing on guys like Frank Kaminsky, whether it's been trading away a Noah Vonleh, whether it's been trading away a pick so you could have more money to spend in 2016 free agency. The pick became Malachi Richardson. It doesn't look like you missed too much with that, although he's still young and maybe the Hornets could have gone in a different direction. But so you just got to get somebody. And because of that, Miles Bridges, Michael Bridges, two guys that you see valued as top 10 talents. Like, if you can get one of those guys at 11, hey, that's a good night. You just go home and you're happy and you think, we got a big wing that can guard a couple positions. Both those guys can shoot. They have a little experience posting up, a little experience running pick and roll, shooting off the bounce some too. And Miles Bridges is a guy that I'm starting to come around on a little bit more too. Just I like his size. I like the thought of him being a small ball four at times. I like the ability, I think, for him to defend more forwards and therefore being able to switch onto more players, maybe a little more so than Michael, although I think he'll totally hold his own too. I think he's a great team defender, great basketball IQ. But I just like the upside of Zaire, and whether I think there's a very good chance the team holds on to Kemba, or at least tries to run it back with him for one more year, and then maybe they just, yeah, I think it would be a horrible idea, but maybe they do just let him walk in 2019 free agency and they just don't want to sow any ill will with the fan base. If you do that too, then I still like the thought of having Zaire as the guy going forward. You know, that they hired a young coaching staff led by a 40-year-old head coach, James Borrego, this summer. They hired a new young play-by-play guy. That's probably not too much older than we are, too. And we'll talk about that in a little bit here, too. But there just seems to be this sort of wave of youth. And also with regards to the coaching staff, just going a little bit cheaper. This is a team that obviously wants to move off some salary, too. And if they sort of see that they're on this track towards a rebuild, then having a guy like Zaire Smith that you may need a year, 2 years to even sort of work with him to become a competent replacement level offensive player in the NBA, or maybe, you know, maybe it's much shorter than that, but I am still willing to take a chance on that more so than to say one of these guys is the safer. I'm willing to go the safer route. And again, Miles and Michael Bridges, they're awesome players. I think they can be starters in the NBA for a decade each, but I'm interested in Zaire.
So Sexton next. You had Sexton fifth, I think. I have him third. But again, I can't get myself on one side or the other when it comes to Sexton and Lonnie Walker. But let's talk about Sexton for a second. So I covered him in the draft prospects piece from last week when you had Zaire. And Sexton is, with the ball in his hands, in the pick and roll, he's the most explosive scorer.
Freaky.
Yeah. And he really wants to get to the rim, but I just think he's the best scorer of point guards out of the pick and roll in this draft. Now, the negatives are, you know, he's a score first guy. He's always looking for his offense, you know, misses his teammates a lot. I think he's got a long way to go in reading the floor and setting up, you know, other guys, weak side guys, shooters. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't read the defense yet. And I just don't think he sees it. I don't even think he looks to read the defense yet. He's so strong. He really is a bull in a china shop. I mean, when he comes around the screen and his defender trails him, he gets that guy on his back and literally just keeps him there and out-muscles him until that second defender and that contact comes. And Sexton has no problem with that contact, taking it on, finishing. But I think all that's a big-time positive because those are the things that – a guy like Trae Young or even Lonnie Walker down the road, you know, with the ball in their hands in pick and roll situations, they're not big contact guys, right? So they're going to have to learn to play in traffic amongst the trees and still finish. It's something we talked about with Kemba Walker for a long time. It's a big time problem. And I think Sexton goes into the NBA with that skill set already. I don't know if I would rather a guy have that skill set and have to learn how to set up his teammates and read defenses or the other way around. I'm not sure. But also haven't seen a point guard like Sexton in a while. He reminds me a little bit of Dennis Smith Jr. They have some similarities. But I haven't seen a guy in a while as strong as Sexton. I mean, every single time I think about his game, the action word that pops in my mind first is strength. And I think that's going to play an advantage for him on both ends of the floor. No, he's like Miles Bridges in the way that his body is ready to take an 82-game beating in the NBA right away. Whereas, you know, a lot of these guys, I don't think they're ready for it. And on top of that, he comes in with a skill set that also should immediately translate in some way or another. Mm-hmm. And that's why I barely lean him over a guy like Lonnie Walker. Although Lonnie has his impressive body, I wouldn't describe his strength like Sexton's. Can play on both ends, has some two-way potential, you know, all this stuff. But, you know, he's got a long way to go in just learning a role. You know, his role at Miami was just very cloudy. And I think it's gonna take a few years in the NBA because of that for him, because he's got to learn. Sexton at least knows who he is.
Yeah. And,
you know, he's going to have to improve other parts, but I like the fact that he knows who he is as a prospect. So if, let's say, hypothetically, Mikal and Miles are both off the board, so your wings, quote-unquote wings, or at least the best available ones aren't there, I would take Sexton over Lonnie, over Zaire, over FGA. But to your point, you said it earlier, BG, the difference between, you know, those four guys is pretty razor thin.
I agree. And there's a lot to like with Sexton. If you go watch the film on him, he's really fun to watch. He knows how to play pick and roll already. That's super important. That plus his strength means there's always a spot in the NBA for that guy. Now, whether that's being a change of pace guy off the bench or that means he's a future all-star, there's a ton of variance in there. But that alone makes him ready to play in the NBA. And I think he'll get better at reading the defense. It takes time. He's never the more open court in the NBA with better shooters around him, I think will immediately make him a better passer without even having to like work on it that much. I just think eventually it'll just, part of that will click immediately. I do with Sexton, the fit with Ian Monk is like a little, we talked about this a couple weeks ago too. The fit with Ian Monk, in my opinion, is like a little cloudy. Just in terms of defensively, offensively, both those guys want the ball. But I think hopefully Malik will, depending on who he's playing with, know to certainly just, you know, leverage his off-ball game a little bit more. But defensively, you just got to hope Malik Monk can stay in front of whomever the worst perimeter option is. And can Sexton guard big wings? Even if there isn't a screen or a switch involved, is he going to be able to just go out and guard two guards in the NBA or the occasional three or whatever, because you probably can't stick Malik Monk on those guys. And hey, maybe that hypothetical is so far into the weeds. I don't think it is, but maybe it is that you can't even take it into consideration because you're just looking for most talented player at 11. And if Sexton's the guy, then man, you don't even think about it. You just pull the trigger on it and you take them. The one other thing I will say about Sexton too is I do think, let's just say hypothetically, Charlotte decides it wants to keep Kemba Walker this summer, not trade him, or they can't find a workable trade or whatever. You know, Charlotte has the point guard, someone better than Michael Carter Williams. I think they can probably figure that out. I haven't seen Richie play basketball, but I would imagine Richie can make at least a third of his jump shots. So if that's the case, that's at least a marginal improvement. But I say that in jest, obviously, but they have limited resources. They have to cut salary, but you know that they have to be able to fit this $3.3 million into the books. And you still got to sign up to 14 guys. So you still got to spend the money. But I do like the thought of using that slotted salary and checking that box off while also filling the backup point guard role, assuming you feel comfortable turning the keys to a 19-year-old guy to be the backup for Kemba, which has been a glaring issue the last two seasons.
Yes. Yeah, no question. And I mean, look, I think you make a great point. It is definitely reason for concern to try to picture Sexton and Monk's defensive fit. You know, I wrote this in my piece about Sexton at the end of kind of, well, why does he fit for the Hornets? Well, I think that he's very intriguing next to Kemba. Kind of thinking about that first, before thinking about the Monk thing. But again, it's important to think about that and definitely necessary. I think Borrego is going to come in, and he's kind of already told us this, with some creative ways to mix his lineups up. And I think Colin Sexton next to Kemba Walker in certain situations, certain lineups is very intriguing and quickly answers the question as to, what position can he really guard on the other end, which allows you to really accelerate his development and take a quick step forward on what the most important aspects for him are to develop in the NBA. Let me ask you a question. So you had Miles over Mikal, right?
Yeah, slightly. Right. They're splitting hairs with those two guys, but yeah.
Okay, but all right, that's fine. Why Miles over Mikal?
It's something I think I like.
Is it the upside?
I think maybe it's just like the size in general. I feel like he's going to be able to comfortably guard more positions in the NBA. And I also like the threat of that size and strength and his ability to put it on the deck on the offensive game too. This is – we've talked about this a little bit in terms of when you watched Philadelphia and Boston play in the Eastern Conference playoffs a couple weeks ago. And one of the reasons why Boston was able to advance in five games, they don't have a surplus of offensive talent with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward out, but all of their guys that were in the rotation could post up, at least the perimeter guys could post up. They could handle and put it on the deck. They could at least try to get around a defender. And I'm including guys like Marcus Smart or Marcus Morris too. And I just think that I trust Miles Bridges to be able to do that more, to be able to combat switching defenses. I like his utility a little bit more than Mikal, even though I like Mikal's jumper better, and I tend to usually favor shooters. But now I would go Miles slightly over Mikal, and because of the individual shot drive creation.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to ask that question purely because I was curious. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think that Miles Bridges is hiding in plain sight. He's become this guy no one's talking about. Mm-hmm. He's been there, for over a year and a half now. He should have probably come out last year. and that stock just hadn't changed. But here he is. He did a lot to his body last season, before the combine, shaved some weight. He played with the ball in his hands a lot last season at Michigan State. He shot the ball pretty well. I think about 37.5%. Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I don't have it right in front of me. In his two seasons at Michigan State, from behind the arc, that is. So there's just so much to like, and why he's not talked about more, I don't quite understand. What I like about Mike Hill just a little bit more is just his offensive upside. And I'm hopeful that he can make the strides necessary with that 6'7 frame and 7'2 wingspan to not get pushed around when he does have to switch. I'm a little worried about the upper body strength. I know we've talked about this in the past. You just look at him and Miles next to each other, and it looks like, you know, it looks like looking at Julius Peppers next to Devin Funchess, right? Like, they look like the same. Like, Michael's taller, but they're just, their bodies are not comparable. And so the point you make is perfect, and that's why I wanted to ask, just because I was curious. But
I'd like to add this, too, real quickly. This is backtracking slightly, but you were talking about Colin Sexton next to Kemba. I one of the reasons why I agree with you and why I think it would work to some extent is because Charlotte's offense starved for shooting as much as it is. I mean, they were an awful three-point shooting team this year. One of the issues was Kemba's the best shooter they have, both on the dribble and off the ball. And it was like they couldn't really find, especially when Batum was out, they couldn't find enough ways to get Kemba open looks coming off down screens. You know, that little quick flare play they like to run for him where he throws it to Batum at the opposite foul line extended area, and then he zips towards the elbow and then sprints back out off a flare from Frank or Dwight or Marvin. And so I think if you had Sexton and Kemba together, you let Kemba get off the ball more, and all of a sudden Charlotte's best catch and shoot guy is running around, not just coming off screens, but he himself is setting back screens, and then he's flaring out. Think of how Golden State uses Steph Curry off the ball, and then, you know, either has Livingston or Draymond Green facilitate, and they get their best gravity player, Curry, running around causing havoc. And you could do that, you know, you could do 85-90% of that with Kemba.
Yeah.
And so I'm intrigued by that. And it also takes a little bit of wear and tear off of Kemba because he doesn't have to just go 1-on-5 in the pick and roll every time down the court. I mean, it's incredible to see. Just like, I looked this up this yesterday. It's kind of amazing to see he shot pretty well at the basket this season, all things considered. But I think it was this year, 85% of the field goals he made at the rim this year were unassisted, which is up from 75% last year. So, like, so I know it's not good. And so it'd be nice to see him off the ball a little bit more. It also means Sexton could be the guy guarding the top, you know, ball handling point guard. And you'd stash Kemba on weaker opposing, you know, just stash him on catch and shoot guys, whatever. So I love the possibility of those two guys together.
Well, and here's the other thing that I didn't even get in my piece, and I thought about it, and I wanted to get it in there, but we're not on a deadline, but you're working toward it. I always leave something out. I mean, you probably do go through this too. You're always like, how did I leave that out? So one of the things I'm thinking is Kemba is – I mean, he's literally trapped, especially last season. Like, he was trapped almost nonstop in pick-and-roll situations. And one of the things – I mean, you saw Indiana do this to – against Cleveland in the playoffs when Cleveland was constantly trapping Oladipo. They were trying to count on Miles Turner to roll down the lane and then make a play against an outnumbered defense, and he couldn't do it. So what was Indiana's counter? They finally brought Bogdanović up to the opposite side of the floor where the trap came from, and now they've got somebody else more capable of going downhill and making a play. Charlotte hasn't had that guy, so just thinking in terms of, like, teams are going to continue to trap Kemba in pick and roll situations, and Charlotte will continue to run those pick and rolls a lot, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But having a guy like Sexton opposite who can catch, and here's the number one guy in the draft as a guard who is he is attacking. I don't care who he's going against. That guy thinks he can take on an army of 10 going to the rim. It's just the way he plays. So having him attack the weak side off of some kind of quick action, an outnumbered defense, and having to make a play or make a decision, I think is really utilizing his strengths as a player right away. So that's why offensively, I think really it's a good fit with Kemba. And on top of that, I think Borrego is going to bring in creative offense like Spain pick and roll and stuff like this.
Yeah. Love that thought.
Guy to be that back screen on the screen, to screen the screener. You know, he's the perfect guy. And then to pop, and then it's the same kind of stuff. You're attacking an outnumbered defense, or at the very least scrambling defense from the top. So,
or invert it with Kemba, too, you know? Have Kemba be the guy setting the back screen, and all of a sudden he's popping up. But Kemba, by the way, this past year, Kemba this season shot 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. Two seasons ago, in 16-17, over 46% on catch and shoot threes for Kemba in 2016, 2017. That, by the way, number one in the NBA on players with at least 200 attempts. He was smoking two seasons ago off the catch, and it would be a great way to get more looks for him. Did you by any chance, I can't remember, in that Sexton piece, did you by any chance throw out the potential lineup of Kemba, Sexton, Batum, like MKG and Cody? Was that something that you threw out or something along those lines? But maybe I'm remembering that incorrectly. But so
I threw out a hypothetical in both of those pieces. I'm going to pull it up right now. It'll take me 2 seconds. So in the Sexton piece, because now I can't remember, I threw out Kemba, Sexton, Monk. Hold your breath. MKG and Zeller.
I like it. I don't even care. I like it. I like all those names.
I think some days I wake up and I forget Nick Batum exists. Yeah. I don't really know why, Zach. I mean, I have a hunch of why, but sometimes I just forget he's a person. So I left him out there.
He kind of has that like deferential personality a little bit too. So, but the point is, like, I think if you lined up Batum at the three with Sexton and Kemba, I mean, defensively, that's maybe a little leaky. But I love the playmaking and the connection between those guys. And if you could throw out a maniac like MKG and a screen setter like Cody out there with them, I'm interested in that lineup.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I knew it was a little bit of a reach with Monk and Sexton sharing the floor with Kemba, but you know, offensively. And I've been in a perpetual search to find a way to get to MKG at the power four position for a long time. And so I hope that Borrego brings some of that. But all right, let's see here. We've discussed Lonnie Walker a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know that we really need to touch on him much more. I was really, really hot on him 2 weeks ago, even 3 weeks ago when I first really started digging deep. I'm still super high on Lonnie. But it's kind of what I said a little bit earlier on this pod is just his role was so just cloudy from game to game, was kind of weird at Miami. I mean, it just seemed like Miami kind of played the hot hand, so to speak, offensively.
Yeah.
And they ran so many pick and rolls that it was kind of, and so many of them could do
more than any, more than anybody in basketball or certainly in the ACC last year. They run a ton of ball screens.
Right. So it's like kind of playing the hot hand. And I wonder if he's going to be that guy who has a ton of potential out of this draft class, but if he doesn't get in the exact perfect situation, he's just not able to find himself as a player, you know, before 3 or 4 years down the road when it's almost like kind of too late. I don't know that. I know that's a pretty broad description of why I'm a little worried, but it does concern me that maybe he doesn't know who he is as a basketball player as much as some of these other guys.
Is it a little disconcerting too with him? And again, I like Lonnie a lot. I'm very interested in him as an NBA prospect. But that, in terms of his role being so cloudy, I think Jim Larrañaga at Miami is a darn good college basketball coach. But it is a little disconcerting that at times last season, and Bruce Brown was in and out of the lineup with injuries, and he missed the last third of the season probably. But even with Bruce Brown out of the lineup, that Larrañaga was putting the ball in the hands of Chris Likes, who is all of 5'7", and Jaquan Newton, who we have 4 years of experience knowing that this guy is an inefficient offensive basketball player.
Yeah.
And that he was still more willing to entrust those two guys than he was to give the ball to Lonnie and say, hey, let's see what I got with this guy.
Now, right. There's so much evidence from his time in Miami that Larrañaga just didn't trust him. It's a great point.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yes. It's kind of the roundabout way of me saying, like, I don't know that he knows who he is as a player. And to your point, like, I don't know the coaches quite know who he is as a player. Just go watch whatever highlight tape you can find on YouTube of Lonnie Walker. Okay. He is explosive. He is athletic. He is really the prototypical combo guard guy who can do a little bit of everything on offense, and he's a two-way guy because he can defend at least two positions, maybe three, we'll see. So I mean, there's plenty to love, but you know, again, he's got to know who he is as a player, and I think that also means he's really got to be put in the perfect situation. And guess what, if you're going to be drafted in the lottery, there ain't a lot of great situations out there.
Maybe Denver, you know, he could chill and learn behind Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, but even then, if he does become a player, is there even a role for him down the line? You know what I mean? Right. Unless he becomes their bench gunner or what, and they might lose Will Barton in free agency this summer too. Do you want to talk at all about some of the wild card prospects perhaps?
Yeah. I want to say, so I know I mentioned earlier that we're going to do Miles Bridges and Kevin Knox. You can read about them on Queen City Hoops in about 3,500 words, which is the average of what BG and I are managing on a weekly basis now. So you can read about them later in the week on queencityhoops.com. I know we talked about Miles a little earlier. I want to save Knox for that reason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, SGA, I know we've talked about him a lot. Let's discuss him a little bit. And then a guy we haven't talked about a ton, Robert Williams, we should probably touch on a little bit too. Why don't you roll it out about Robert Williams? Because I see you shaking your head right now like you've got something to say.
No, that's I'm glad. I wanted to bring up Robert Williams too. And so I was just nodding my head in approval. So he worked out in Charlotte, I believe, over the weekend. Was that Saturday or Sunday? He was at the practice facility working out.
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah, we talked about this guy before. I mean, an absolute force at the rim. I don't have the synergy numbers right in front of me, but was one of the most efficient and productive scorers at the basket this season for a team in Texas A&M that really didn't play with a ton of space on offense. I mean, they started a front line of 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", and they packed the paint. And it'd be interesting to see him as like a rim-running, screen-setting, slip-dive guy. The Hornets have a lot of centers, so I'm a little iffy on him, but then again, I get triggered by my belief in taking the best player available. And if you decipher him to be that, then go for it and figure everything else out. My question to you was going to be with regard to Williams. So we just got done watching the NBA Finals, the conference finals. You saw how important it was with Houston for Clint Capella to be able to switch and slide and stay in front of Kevin Durant or Steph Curry. Same thing with Draymond Green coming off and being able to guard James Harden or Chris Paul. It's what makes Tristan Thompson, he's not nearly the player he was 2 years ago, but the fact that he can still sort of credibly do that, it makes him sort of valuable too. Do you see Robert Williams as a guy that could switch out and guard ones, guard twos, guard threes after a ball screen?
So it's funny you ask that because it's actually like literally on my list of draft things to get done, draft evaluation to get done mm-hmm. before next Thursday is can Williams slide? Mm-hmm. Can he just move his feet and move laterally? That's all. If I have the answer to that, it's going to tell me so much about what I think about him as a prospect. For the little film that I've watched on him, the consensus, and this is what most scouts are saying about him, is that, look, obviously elite rim protector. His motor runs a little hot and cold, but not fantastic feet.
Okay.
And it doesn't get into a great stance when he is pulled out around the perimeter against ball handlers. But I'm not sure that I'm ready to say from what little I've seen that he can't do it, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's real validity. The people that roll their eyes to this concept that he was playing out of position last season is dumb to me because he was playing out of position.
Yeah.
It's obvious. He's okay. If you played power forward in the NCAA and you're being scouted to play center at the highest level of basketball, probably means you're playing out of position.
Yeah, probably.
So, you know, and I mean, I think all the positives offensively, are obvious. You know, he's going to roll. He's going to destroy the rim. He's going to draw defensive gravity. It's just that defensive question. And I don't know the answer to that, but I hope to have an opinion into early next week about what I think about Williams because, you know, one of the comparisons, it's not really a comparison, but one of the guys I think in the last few drafts that is kind of similar to Williams in his stock is in that same range area. The Hornets almost took this guy. They had a crush on him. Is Bam Adebayo? Mm-hmm. I think he's a much more powerful player than Williams mm-hmm. is, and I think he probably is more mobile than Williams, at least mm-hmm. from what I can see so far. But if he's able to be a guy like that, now I'm much more intrigued. I think Bam Adebayo could be a future All-Star. I mean, I just love what he could become.
He's going to be an All NBA defense guy. Like, there's no doubt. There's almost no doubt about it. He projects to be that good, I think.
Right. Like, and he just needs Whiteside out of the way at this point.
Yeah.
And,
agreed.
You know, But to your point earlier, like a guy like Williams, if you're the Hornets and you're saying, we love this guy, and they brought him in to work him out, they obviously wanted at least a second opinion on him. We love this guy. If he's there at 11, we're taking him. Then you need a plan at center, right? Because you cannot bring this guy in. I just can't imagine a universe where you're going to bring this guy in and say you're fourth in line at center.
Right? Yeah. Ineffective use probably of a roster spot either, too.
Exactly. So that's probably, we talk about best player available, blah, 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 blah. But in this situation, because this roster really is so littered in centers, that pick just doesn't make much sense to me at all if there's not a trade before the draft or shortly thereafter.
I guess one way you could do it is you either trade Cody Zeller or Hernan Gomez and then shoot Dwight Howard into the sun, and then you would have plenty of plenty of reps and practice time for Robert Williams to develop in a professional basketball team. I don't think they're going to go that route, and the Players Association would probably frown upon the latter part of that plan. So I don't think Charlotte, even a thinking outside the box team, can go that route. It's a little too.
I do have a solution to that, though. I'm pretty sure that shout out to our man at Marion. I don't remember the rest of his Twitter handle, but you know who you are if you're listening right now. I know you will be willing to not only drive him to the airport, you'll get him on the plane, and then you'll attempt to drive this commercial jet to wherever he would like to go, fly it back. I'll pick you back up from the airport and drive you back to your house if you're willing to do it.
That guy is maybe my favorite, Twitter, or one of them. We have a lot of great fans that listen to this podcast and give us feedback. That guy and his dedication to the Dwight Howard cause is amazing. I salute you, sir. You are a soldier, and you deserve the highest of honors and respects amongst the online Hornets community. It is truly a blessing. On perhaps a weekly basis, exclusively about your frustrations with one person who I share a lot of the same sentiments.
So, I just like how he still has the egg profile picture. That's my favorite part of it.
I love that too.
Wait, are we sure he's not a burner account?
Maybe.
This is like Cody Zeller's burner account.
Yeah. Oh man.
Or it's the Plumlee brother that got it's Miles Plumlee. He's like pissed he got traded, so this is his burner account. Shit, man. Maybe it's Brian Colangelo's wife. Who knows? That didn't get swept up in that scoop there.
You never know. The possibilities are endless here. Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah, there you go. Otis Smith, why not? Let's just keep throwing out.
Emeka Okafor.
Yeah, Pau Gasol. Mike D'Antoni, all the people. James Harden, why not? Daryl Morey. It's definitely Daryl Morey,
That's
the problem. One of the other names I wanted to throw out, too, he's worth touching on, even though we've discussed him plenty. And I think the only reason why we haven't gone into him even more. It's to be honest, it's similar to Malik Monk probably a year ago, but it's because we don't think he's going to fall to us, or pardon me, we don't think he's going to fall to Charlotte, and that's Wendell Carter out of Duke. And in terms of doing due diligence, I want to mention this guy's name because I think he can really be a player. I think this is a guy that can switch out and guard multiple positions. I think this is a guy that can hold his own against post defenses, while defending post ups, smart, strong, steady base, knows how to use the baseline as an extra defender, so fundamentally skilled on both ends of the court, unselfish, can impact the game in more ways than shooting the basketball, rebounds, starting the break, making plays in space on short rolls or when people ice pick and roll. I love this guy's game, and I think it's going to translate quickly into the NBA. And I think eventually he can maybe even be an all-star level big guy in the NBA. I feel strongly about Wendell Carter as an impact player. He's going to be there at 11, but boy, it would be nice.
Yep. I was doing some stuff on him last night. ESPN, actually, they what used to be Draft Express, basically they're just holding hostage until like 2 weeks out from the draft, and now they're releasing everything. So that's it's basically the content and the quality is just as good. It's just we didn't have 6 months to dive deep. So anyways, I was watching their hit and video scouting video on Wendell last night, and I think it's super well done, as they all are, but I think it does do a good job at focusing on his biggest weakness or biggest question mark. And, you know, BG, you said you think he can switch out and guard multiple positions. Along the process, for me, it's been if he's going to be a five in the NBA, which I think he probably should be, but I do see a universe where he could be a four. Just he's like a farther along Derek Favors offensively when he came out of Georgia Tech. You know, and that means, okay, maybe he can play some four. But, yeah, when he switches out against guards, can he survive, you know, and can he hedge hard, move his feet and recover? He showed that to me. You saw him more in person, BG, but he's pretty inconsistent with that at Duke.
And they played zone so much too that right, 5 point in the year, you couldn't even evaluate it.
Yeah, it was hard to tell, but you know, his feet are slow to me. As skilled as he is and as smooth as he is as an athlete is how many offensive moves he has in the arsenal, as you broke down there a second ago. He does appear to struggle to move in space, to keep up, move laterally. His feet just kind of glue to the floor. He can get up and block shots and affect things because he's so good at going straight up. You know, he's not some elite, shot blocker. And he can get up and dunk the ball and put it back. But, you know, the synonyms of him being not an explosive leaper and a little bit slow with his feet, you know.
Worrisome.
Little bit, you know, and more just because of the position he's going to be asked to play, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wonder about that. But I mean, he, for me too, I agree. I mean, if he falls to the Hornets, he's the guy that I want. I think he'd be a great player. I'm not sure he'll be an all-star, but I think he'd get damn close.
I may have gotten a little caught up there a second ago.
It's feasible. I mean, there's definitely a universe. I mean, it's just hard with Carter as it has been with a lot of prospects in the past. I just always go back to the Karl Anthony Towns one because I just can't believe when he got to the NBA, I couldn't believe what he was capable of doing, of what he was able to show at Kentucky. And I think Carter could be very similar. Like, and he literally said it, I think after it, maybe it was at the combine or I don't know where he was getting interviewed. Yeah. He's like, look, I just don't think I've been able to show what I can do. And if that's the case, and this guy has some athletic explosiveness and just zest to him as an athlete, quickness that we didn't know he had, then yeah, absolutely. He could be, you know, a 5+ year all-star. It was just so crowded at Duke and playing with Bagley. I just can't imagine how hard it would be to play with a guy who just will not move the ball at all.
Like, some of Carter's best games are the ones when Bagley didn't play. I keep hearkening back to this, but I covered the game in Durham against Louisville without Bagley. And Carter making plays in space in the middle of the floor. I thought it was by far the best game he had all season. And he played 25 really good games this year at Duke. But I thought this one sort of stood out. There was one other point I was going to make on two things on Carter real quickly. One, do you guys know the other school he almost went to over Duke? Do you guys remember? I think it was actually the school that he picked Duke over this other school. Do you remember who? Okay, Richie, any guesses?
SMU.
Ah, close. Not quite, though. Although I have heard that SMU is called the Harvard of Texas, so maybe that's a kid. But he was considering strongly going to Harvard.
Oh, wow.
And I love the thought of what Wendell Carter would have done playing in the Ivy League last year. Like some 6'6 center from Dartmouth is trying to defend Wendell bleeping Carter. He would have averaged 35-22 in the Ivy League on like 62% shooting. It would have been amazing to watch him just destroy the Prestons and the Jacksons and the Jasons on the block all season in the Ivy League. I kind of wish we could have seen it happen, even though
we would be talking about him as the number one pick, or he wouldn't be considered a first round pick.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it would go one way or the other. So that would have been fascinating.
Perception is a funny thing. I also think too, I want to make a quick point because we were just talking about Carter's ability to defend in space and switch. Man, it's crazy to see how quickly we've gotten to this point with all these big guys. Like, we ask ourselves that question about all of these dudes. We just talked about it with Robert Williams. Everybody's wondering it with DeAndre Ayton. Everyone's wondering it with Mo Bamba, Marvin Bagley. Jaren Jackson is maybe the one guy we feel pretty comfortable in projecting him as is a guy that should be able to comfortably switch. But the league is just, it's become so three driven and switch heavy that you got to wonder how these guys are going to be able to defend 25 feet from the hoop. It's just, it's crazy. This is probably something that I don't, 4 or 5 years ago, you weren't having to consider. And now it has to be in the conversation for every single one of these guys. It doesn't matter how good they are offensively either.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the positionless NBA combined with the big that can, you know, be positionless. I don't know if bigs can be totally positionless, but, you know, can guard 3, 4, maybe 5 positions in certain situations is fascinating. And just how fast the game has changed is fascinating. But look, we'll kind of end this segment with talking these draft prospects. I just want to say, you know, the bigs in this draft is without question the most interesting, you know, subplot here, because I still have a hard time believing that Ayton, Jackson, Bagley, Bamba, and Carter are all going to go in the top 8.
I mean, probably
it's hard to imagine those first four not going in the top 5, but in an NBA that values wings that can switch and be versatile so much, this is a draft dominated by bigs, which is very ironic. So I would just watch that subplot, because I could see things starting to change, at least for one of these guys. Carter would be the obvious candidate, you know, into early next week, but we shall see. All right. Let's talk LeBron. You know, this is something everybody's got to talk about right now, because of what we kind of said earlier. It's going to affect everything that happens from this day moving until the end of free agency into next season. But throw it to you first. Let's both make a prediction about what he's going to do real quickly. And then let's talk about it. I'll throw out another hypothetical if neither one of us predict that outcome and how the Hornets can kind of get involved in this. So, BG, what is LeBron going to do here?
So I would love to see him go to Houston in a way where Houston also didn't have to part ways with Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker and could build a trade around Ryan Anderson and a third team. That seems so profoundly unlikely that I don't want to really truly entertain it. I think there's a good chance, and Philadelphia makes a lot of sense too. Betting odds from Bovada came out yesterday, had the Lakers at number one, and I think there's a really good chance that he, with all that cap space in Los Angeles, and they can fit two max contracts pretty easily into the books this year. Some interesting young players. I don't know if he values Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball as being ready to win right now, but if he could team up with Paul George or Chris Paul out there, Chris Paul is a good friend of his, that makes the Lakers a very, very interesting landing situation. And I think it makes them, as of right now, the front runners to land him, even though I think they're probably a little too young and it's in the Western Conference. So that's a huge red flag. The one other thing I would want to bring up, and I did a radio hit in Greenville yesterday afternoon on 94.3 The Game with my buddy Josh Graham. And one of the ones I threw out was the possibility of Boston. If you could look at these things in a vacuum, these, you know, either where he could sign or where he could opt into the final year of his contract and then be traded, Boston makes the most sense. They make the most sense for basically anybody in a trade because they have the most assets, right? They have the most fluid roster and they have a skilled front office. So it's no surprise they ring to the top. But if Boston could build a trade around Kyrie and a third team like the Suns or the Knicks to take Kyrie and get a superstar, and then the Knicks could get some draft picks, like let's say the Cavs will get some draft picks in return for this. If it was the Knicks, I think it would be the number 9 pick going to Cleveland in this 3-team swap. But I just love the thought of LeBron, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford together. Like, that's a lineup that can contend with the Golden State Warriors position by position, and it's in the Eastern Conference, and it's with arguably, or perhaps not even an argument, one of the 2 or 3 best basketball coaches in the world right now. In Brad Stevens. So I love the prospects of him going to Boston. I love the thought of Jason Tatum getting to play alongside him. I just don't know if they can swing a deal with Kyrie, if that looks like that's bad faith on their part, or if Kyrie, with only a year left on his contract, is going to have that many suitors because he can become an unrestricted free agent in 2019. But so Boston and Los Angeles, those are the two teams that I've sort of circled, but plenty of other teams make sense too.
Yeah, very interesting with Boston. I've thought a lot about that too. Just my quick reaction on that is, with Kyrie, I just don't know. I don't know. I just, I'm not quite sure why LeBron would do it in the scenario like you threw out, where, you know, he opts in and then, you know, he's got the flex. It's one season. He has the flexibility for the next season to do what he wants. And then Kyrie, I mean, it's starting to sound like he's destined for New York now, to be honest, here a year from now. So, I mean, that guy, just so weird.
Yeah, he's a character, man.
Yeah, no kidding. LA, I think that would be my prediction right now. You know, the cap space is obviously one of the big draws. I think that Lonzo would be traded in that situation. I just don't think LeBron makes would want to. And look, like, the big baller shit is like gone now. I mean, we never hear about it anymore. You know, it was a comment, right? You know, it was a flash in the pan, comment through the sky, whatever. But I just think that they can't play together. How does Lonzo play with LeBron? And how does that family take on, like, Lonzo not having the ball in his hands? You know, I don't know how that works. I don't think it does. I think LeBron comes in and he's like, all right, well, this kid's got to go. You know, this family, we're shipping them to ship him back to Europe. You know, take him over there. Not going to be on my team.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the first move they'd have to make. And so maybe the Lakers could get something for that, to be honest.
I would say so.
And then, like you said, I mean, I think it's the Chris Paul thing, like, I'm sure there was some kind of, we'll pay you, you know, when they traded for him, just opt in, we'll pay you a year from now, the 5-year max or whatever. But I don't trust Chris Paul, to be honest with you. And I just think that he could easily leave Houston and go to LA, join LeBron, join Paul George. And, you know, that's probably the best shot of beating the Warriors right there. Paul George, Chris Paul, LeBron, some young talent that gives you energy on a nightly basis and wings out there that can switch a lot of stuff. I mean, I think that team matches up pretty good with Golden State. But, the only other team I would throw out there, somebody mentioned this to me. Actually, my buddy mentioned it to me about 2 months ago, and I kind of like at that time laughed. But I think it is possible that LeBron could go to San Antonio. And nobody's talking about it.
It makes sense too, man.
His love for Greg Popovich has been long discussed and long noted. And, you know, I just think that, like, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, that combination is, it could be super special. Now, I don't, you know, San Antonio doesn't have as much room to operate as some of these other teams. They don't have the assets that Boston has. They don't have the cap space that, you know, the Lakers have. But, you know, when LeBron wants to come to your team, that attracts at least one other piece, and you just figure it out. And then on top of that, Greg Popovich, you know, he's like having a half other player on the floor. So I don't know. I would just keep an eye on that one. But my prediction right now is the Lakers as it stands.
Yeah.
And don't count out Cleveland. And this is a good segue. Neither one of us brought up this situation as our prediction, but to me, and I would like to see if you agree, BG, to me, Cleveland's only chance at keeping LeBron is making a trade before the draft here to use that number 8 pick as leverage, try to extract more value out of it than maybe a lot could see possible here, and get a player and also a pick, maybe a late lottery pick.
Yeah.
You know, just swap picks here. So, I mean, I think it's something we've been talking about for a long time. I think it's the Kemba Walker trade to Cleveland with, I don't know, I mean, I've heard Kemba and Dwight. Can Dwight help that team, you know, in exchange for the number 8 pick and some salary filler, you know, and possibly a young player? It involves Kemba somehow, but I think we'd be stupid to say that's not in play. And look, if Cleveland, you know, if they take Kemba from us and we get the eighth pick. And then, I don't know, I'm blanking on a player right now that would be promising from Cleveland that we could get. You know, I still think it's a win for them in some ways.
Chetty Osmond, maybe?
Chetty Osmond. I think if you're Charlotte, yeah, you have to ask for something else. I mean, just the 8-11 swap.
Yeah.
And Kemba is not enough. But
no.
You got to ask for something else. If you can get a future first, or at that point, at least, like, seriously, I know that some people are going to roll their eyes, but at least you get something from Kemba. Because, again, like, what is his incentive to stay in Charlotte after next season? What is it? I'll be happy to wait. And if you want to say, well, Kyrie Irving's going to New York, right? So where's he going to go? Well, there's other places in the NBA. The New York. The team that no free agent wants to go to right now for all stars to go to. So I just don't understand why Kemba would stay. But back to my original point, I think we'd have to get a little more back than just that 8-11 swap and maybe a guy like Shetty.
Yeah, I agree. Cleveland doesn't have a ton in the pipeline in terms of like young, interesting talent outside of Osmond, who I do like. Some of the other interesting things with Cleveland's roster too. Just a quick point, like if LeBron does leave there, then boy, let's watch the trade market for Kevin Love, because all of a sudden that starts to become a thing too. Like, you lose LeBron, you may as well try to just tear the whole thing down, shed salary and stuff like that. And I would imagine a guy like Kevin Love would become a very interesting trade piece here. And some other interesting salary that they could throw around to match. J.R. Smith is going to make made 13.8 this year. He'll make 14.7 next year. George Hill, 20 this year, 19 next year. He'll make $18 million in 2019, 2020, but that is non-guaranteed, or at least a large chunk of it is non-guaranteed, to my knowledge. So those are some interesting salaries you could throw around to match if some other guys got in the mix, you know, Nick Batum, Dwight Howard, et cetera.
Would you do Kemba 8-11 swap for, and let's say, Lamb? For Love and take on one of, I don't know, I don't have their books right in front of me, but take on one of like J.R. Smith or Thompson.
I would hesitate. I just, Love's not doing much for me if I'm Charlotte, unless you think you could turn around and flip him for something else. It's just, if you move Kemba, I just think it's time to reboot and just start to bottom, like top to bottom, just reboot the whole thing. And Love,
that's a problem that's a problem with Cleveland. They just don't have those expirings that make a deal like that attractive.
Exactly. They don't. It's the way it goes. So I'm not crazy, I think Kevin Love is an awesome player. He can still be an impact player for contending teams, but that's not really the point of what a transaction like that. That doesn't move the needle for Charlotte at all. So I wouldn't do that, only to jump up three spots in the draft, piss off all the fans by trading Kemba. Like, I just don't, unless there was some kind of future first round attached to it, I'm putting the phone down pretty quickly on that one.
Yeah. And that really is the key. It's that future pick that just gets somebody to part ways with it. If it's, you know, if the original attractiveness to a deal in trading Kemba is just like a three slot swap in this year's draft. Yeah. And I just don't think anybody's going to part ways with that. You know, I really don't. But look, we've talked about this a lot too. There's going to be a lot of desperate teams this summer, and 99% of those desperate teams are not going to have any cap space. So that's going to raise the trade price to get an all-star caliber player like Kemba Walker. So that continues to be the point of leverage for a team like Charlotte, who has got their finger on the reset button, hadn't quite pressed it yet, and, you know, is entering an uncertain summer. I mean, you brought this up many times, BG. We've talked about it a ton, is, you know, the summer 2016, how unlucky Charlotte got with that cap spike and out those bad contracts. You know, I always think about is this a summer where the basketball gods kind of give back to the Hornets, where, again, there's no money out there. There's no money out there, but there are a lot of teams that want to improve. So they got to do it via trade. And so the teams that really aren't looking to acquire better players in a trade, but are looking to acquire some assets, those teams that want to improve might be, you know, more willing to part ways with more assets because they don't have money. So, you know, Charlotte can get in the mix, and you got to be creative when you're thinking about homes for Kemba. But, you know, as we talk about this LeBron situation, what Cleveland's going to do, I think you naturally kind of connect the dots and say, you know, Kimba, LeBron. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Would attract LeBron. Yeah.
When we were looking at hypotheticals midseason for Kemba, Cleveland was a team that we definitely pitched ideas about. This is before they swung all those crazy deals at the deadline, but they were clearly looking to upgrade. And Kemba at the trade deadline was the best player that could hypothetically be available. And now things are a little different and his contract is effectively expiring. You're only getting one playoff run out of him. And this just might be a wacky summer in general. So he's probably not the top trade chip to be had if he was on the market, but he's still a damn good one. And that's worth keeping in mind for Charlotte. Although things might, we're what, almost a week out from the draft, 9-10 days out. So things would have to move pretty quickly too.
Yeah. And I would expect, it works like this every year, we'll get to Monday morning and rumors and reports, stuff will be flying around. And again, I expect trades to be discussed a lot more, a lot earlier this year than they usually are. Just because of the state of the NBA and the very choked off cap situation for all these teams.
What's good, y'all? This is your boy, Justin, a.k.a. Just Blaze, host of Above the Rim. And if you want a raw take on the NBA, Above the Rim is a show for you. With dope beats and entertaining guests each week, we offer a great new insight on all things NBA. You don't want to miss it. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and the Almighty Baller Network.
We wanted to give a shout out to our big friend of the podcast for a long time. That's Chris Kroger, was named the new radio voice of the Charlotte Hornets here last week. Again, friend of the show, awesome dude. If you follow him on Twitter, you know how knowledgeable he is. You know how funny he is. You know how really he just covers this team in a lighthearted but also very, very smart way. And I've always enjoyed, what he's brought to the table in terms of Hornets coverage. So I think it's pretty obvious that I think Charlotte made the right decision here to take over. I mean, fill the shoes of Steve Martin. Geez, that's not easy. But Chris Kroger, I don't think you can find a better guy to do it. So congrats to Chris.
I echo all of those thoughts. Chris, by the way, is the youngest play-by-play voice in the NBA now, only 30, 31 years old. So when he was born, that was when Steve Martin started calling games for the Hornets, which is crazy. Right. But it was it's a slam dunk, pardon the horrible pun there, but it's a slam dunk hire. It's been so cool to see how excited he's been on Twitter. He came on Sports Channel 8, the radio show with us, and I passed along a warm congratulations from BuzzBeat, but I'm glad we're getting to do another one here. And if I could selfishly speak about this a little bit, there's a chance that without Chris, I'm not even doing the podcast with you guys. Chris Kroger and at Baseline Buzz, another friend of ours in the Hornets universe, and then probably you, Spencer, were probably the first three guys that started about 2 years ago, started sharing some of my nerdier, statty Hornets tweets out there. And Chris was one of the first guys to support me and give my, kick my stuff out to a wider audience. And I'm super grateful for that. And looking forward to having him come on the podcast at some time again.
Yep, no doubt. I mean, I'm glad you said it that way. I mean, he's one of those guys that had a lot of influence out there in Hornets Twitter community and just social media community in general. And he's always been very, very kind to us. Sharing our stuff and he's had the same effect on me, BG. I mean, a big motivator of mine. I mean, when you get recognized from a guy like Chris, who's in the midst of it and has been for a while for the Hornets and radio in Charlotte, it motivates you to keep going. Big time props to Chris and congratulations to him. So the last segment really, really wanted to dig into here was just a trade hypothetical. I know we just kind of did one of those, but with all these reports coming out, and really you saw there was one today, I think it was the Ringer had it, Memphis at number 4 and Sacramento at number 2 are very, very interested in trading out of those spots and trading back into the draft. I think maybe it included Dallas as well. So who picks 5? Now, you don't know who's sharing this information, why it's getting out there, who's trying to create the leverage, but we'll play to it regardless. So I asked BG to come up with a hypothetical trade that gets the Hornets into the top four. I'll do the same. We'll quickly run through this. All right. I've got the Hornets getting to number two in the draft by trading Cody Zeller and Kemba Walker to Sacramento for Zach Randolph in his 2 years remaining on his deal for about 12 a year. Garrett Temple, an expiring contract for $8 million. And Harry Giles coming back home. And he's on his rookie scale deal that's very, very cheap. So what you get there is basically you get the number two pick and you get Harry Giles for Kemba Walker, Cody Zeller, and then obviously you're sending 11 to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Sacramento would do that, but we talked about it before we jumped on the show here. Yeah, when Sacramento is rumored to want to do anything,
call them.
Pick up the phone and call and just see. So that's my hypothetical trade that, according to the trade machine, would give the Hornets 8 less wins next year and would give the Kings 5 less wins, or 5 plus wins. So it would keep them in purgatory and send us more in the direction where we want to go, which is not being good. And on top of that, it gives us a shot, obviously, at a Luka Doncic or a Jaren Jackson or a Marvin Bagley. I mean, whatever. Tickles your fancy there. All right, BG, what do you got?
I'll say real quickly too. I have not given up on Harry Giles. Like, I'm keeping that flame alive. If that guy gets healthy, maybe that's a huge if. But
I agree. Yeah,
boy, I still think there's tremendous value in that guy in a rookie scale contract. And fingers crossed, he can get healthy and play up to, you know, who knows what percentage of his potential? Because he was certainly thought of as a special guy. I got to cover him up close at Duke last year, and I want it badly for him to have a good pro career. But and by the way, spread pick and rolls with Cody, Kemba, and Buddy Hield spacing the floor. Like, I like the sound of that a little bit too. That if I'm a Kings fan. But my hypothetical, and hey, I'll just say this: all these deals are tough. It feels like, you know, top four teams, you know, they're technically in rebuild mode. Feels like it would be tough to unearth them from one of those picks unless you somehow get a third team in there to facilitate. I thought Phoenix would have been a little more interesting. They hadn't ended up with the number one pick, but alas, here we are. So anyways, my hypothetical. All right, guys, I'm staying in the good old Southeast Division. I'm checking in. I'm calling down south to our I-85 brethren. I'm calling the Atlanta Hawks, and here's what I'm doing. I'm sending Kemba Walker. I'm sending Frank Kaminsky or Julian Stone, who's non-guaranteed and Atlanta could waive, and the number 11 pick. And then return, I'm getting the number 3 pick from the Hawks, and I'm getting a guy that I'm not crazy about as a player, but I'm getting Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, Lord.
And the only other thing that I would maybe, if I'm Charlotte, I maybe try to weasel the number 30 pick out of the Hawks too, which the Houston is owed via Houston for them, this last pick of the first round. So here's some of my thoughts with all of this. Look, Dennis Schroeder is not happy in Atlanta. Everyone knows that. Charlotte would be buying way too high on Schroeder. I'm not a fan of this guy as a player. We really haven't been since he signed his extension. Dude has off the court issues. And he's not quite as young as you think. Like, he'll be 25 by the start of next season, but still 3 years younger than Kemba. He signed through 2021 at an average of 15.5 million a year. So that's pretty steep. And you're adding on more bad long-term salary. You know, he signed through the same year that Nick Batum is. But maybe if you can figure out a way to get multiple first round picks and back for this, including that number 3 pick, which you could use on perhaps Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, you know, whomever is in that top 5. And, you know, it'd be great if somehow in this hypothetical Charlotte could try to extract John Collins or Taurean Prince, but I can't imagine Atlanta is too keen on parting ways with those guys. And one of the other little variations I was sort of sussing out a little bit was you add Michael Kidd-Gilchrist to this trade as opposed to Frank Kaminsky. But then you'd have to figure out some sort of, like, Dwayne Dedman would have to pick up his, like, the salaries get tricky. You would need, you know, Dwayne Dedman to pick up his $6.3 million option for next season. That's probably unlikely. There's some free agent buzz with him. Or Mike Muscala to pick up his $5 million option next season. That's probably a little more likely. But yes, that's my deal. It's Charlotte taking the 11th pick, Kemba Walker, Frank Kaminsky, and trading it to Atlanta for Dennis Schroeder and his crappy contract, the number 3 pick, and hopefully the number 30 pick, or, you know, some second rounders, or just some other draft filler basically in there.
Yeah. I mean, I like the concept of the trade. If you can get number 3 and number 30.
Yeah.
The first thing that came to mind,
maybe throw that 55 in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, maybe that swings the scale a little bit, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, and that would be important because Charlotte in that deal would be sending out 3 players, getting back 1, mm-hmm. 2 draft picks. Yeah, 55 would be important because it would help you build out a roster that would, you know, you can't in free agency, you know. So, yeah, I think that's important. Good point, Richie. Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind was Dennis Schroeder and Dwight Howard on the same team. Yes,
first thing that came to my mind.
I've got a note with that too. That
terrifies me.
Yeah.
I mean, but like at that point, who cares? Dwight's coming off the following year, and oh man, but like we would have to bite so hard next season. I mean, because we would be taking it in the you know where.
Yeah.
Boy, that would be a circus.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would. I think Charlotte has negative interest in bringing those two guys together for all of the obvious reasons. It just goes against any sort of culture that was established during Steve Clifford. I was trying to think of teams that would be looking for a point guard, and I think Phoenix would maybe be in the market for that, but I don't think they want to come off the number 1 pick. And Sacramento has Frank Mason and De'Aaron Fox, and I mean, who knows if either of those guys materialize. And then Memphis has Mike Conley, who's past his prime, but they still have him on the books, and he's super expensive, and when healthy is still pretty damn good. So
yeah, and Atlanta too, like if they're interested in like getting in the mix in the Eastern Conference, add Kemba, take on Stone, then waive him. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to pick number 3. You could even move 11 if you want. Now you've like, you're starting to create some cap space.
Exactly.
To improve. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, look, I actually like the trade. If Charlotte's getting 3, 30 and 55, or whatever it is Atlanta has in the second round, I would say, yeah, let me think about it, but I might do that.
The only thing is the second round pick, the 55, that would be outgoing. And this, like, that's Charlotte's second round pick. And Atlanta has a second round pick, but I do think there are some restrictions on it, so I'm not even sure. It's like in the 30s. I need to double check, but I'm not even sure if that second round pick is movable. You know what I mean?
I got you. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Charlotte says 55.
Yeah.
So that's true. There might be a rule against the Hawks actually trading everything they have in the draft in one transaction. Or, but yeah, I mean, if you get 3 picks somehow in a deal, in that deal, that would be huge. I might do it. But yeah, that's close, man. I mean, those are the ones that you have to think about, BG, because you just have to be realistic about what the market is for Kemba. And a trade like that makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways for both sides.
Again, if you could strip away the issues with Schroeder and the like the just spite that he and Dwight Howard have for one another, it's once you start to add that context back in that it becomes a bit of a head scratcher. And again, Schroeder signed for the next 3 seasons too. So you're taking on long-term salary, you know, close to $50 million over the next 3 years for this guy. That's not ideal. But yeah, it's just it's tough to work any of these other moves for a top 4 pick.
Yeah, it really is. But I wanted to, for us to just think out loud about a situation where Charlotte could jump up and really shake this whole rebuild up. Which, you know, if this report is true, if there's any sliver of truth to you know, Memphis or Sacramento or these teams wanting to jump out, I think Charlotte's absolutely going to pick up the phone and call and try to figure out, all right, what is it that you're looking for? We don't have much, but we do have something. His name's Kemba Walker. Are you interested? I mean, that's how you accelerate and kind of press fast forward on a reset. So if the opportunity's there, Kupchak should pick up the phone and call. Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. Well, we covered a lot, and as always, you're probably not still listening. If you are, hey, shouts out to you, man, because we've rambled for about an hour and a half. Richie, I know you've jumped in here a few times. What do you think? Did we leave anything out? Is there anything else we need to cover? Are there any Twitter questions we need to get to real quick?
No, I mean, no Twitter questions. Just a lot of, a handful of people on Twitter giving their takes on their top three and mentioned some of the same players that you guys did. It's funny because, Brian mentioned Zaire Smith, and I scrolled down through all the comments through Twitter. Not one of them had Zaire Smith in their top three. If we extended it to the top five, they probably would have. And then a lot of people said Knox as well, and I don't think either of you guys mentioned Knox in your top five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was an honorable mention. But again, we'll have I'll be covering Kevin Knox in our last draft spotlight of the series on Queen City Hoops, and BG will have Miles Bridges. That's coming out either Friday or Saturday on queencityhoops.com. So, all right, well, let's wrap this thing up. We'll hopefully be back one more time before draft night. I don't know which day it's going to be next week. We're going to try our best to get one more episode in because I'm sure there's going to be a lot more news come down the hill here before next Thursday. And in addition to that, we're discussing the specifics to some kind of buzzcast on draft night, probably after the 11th pick or whenever it is we do pick. But we're not quite sure what that's going to look like. But we will have some kind of buzzcast that night. So go ahead and mark your calendars for that. It won't be the 4-hour marathon we had last year. I hope you guys enjoyed that, but we'll have something for you. So, all right, don't forget, we are a proud member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Check out almightyballer.com for tons of other great content out there, especially in the summer. I mean, I think this podcast network does a really, really good job of making a lot of fun with the draft and free agency mm-hmm. and all the different storylines. So I think that's really this podcast strength. So check them, all that other stuff out. Sports Channel 8. Don't forget those guys, sportschannel8.com, at sportschannel, the number 8 on Twitter. And then obviously, once again, queencityhoops.com, the home of BuzzBeat. Check out our draft coverage. I've already told you about those other two draft pieces we have out there. There's really a 2018 draft link dump page where all the stuff that we've written and had written on the site, anything that pertains to the draft this year, it is on there. If you've missed anything in the past, you can go catch up by reading that page. I actually need to update it. I promise I'll do that tomorrow. But go check that out. All right. On behalf of myself, that is Richie, and that is BG. We will see you sometime next week.